What if I told you that there's a cure for chronic pain? Yes, for that pain you were told you would just have to manage. And what if I told you that that cure is already inside of you? Would you believe me? Welcome to the Let's Talk Mind Body Healing podcast, where we talk about how to truly alleviate chronic suffering.
I'm your host, Felicia Jaramus, and today you're listening to episode number 29. So I made it, finally releasing this one. Time to explain myself, I guess, a bit. Quick life update. So about 3 podcast episodes ago, I mentioned that I was feeling really, really tired, exhausted. Well, shortly after releasing the episode, I found out there was a reason for that. And that is that I am pregnant again. So due December this year, it's been a lot to process. The timing of it was really sudden and much sooner than expected, particularly given that it took 2.5 years for me to fall pregnant the first time around. But as I've mentioned, I do really believe that was a TMS thing. But it's been a ride since then. The fatigue has been so unbelievable. I don't really remember much fatigue the first time around. But this time, just so exhausted, barely keeping up, and no rest really, chasing after a toddler all day. It was here as well. So, I mean, it's good news, positive. We're excited. Expanding our family, but for me it was quite a shock to the system. So I think I went into a freeze state in my nervous system. I went pretty numb, dissociated, didn't feel anything for a while, just really wasn't myself. As you all know, I spent a lot of time getting my website ready, getting all my qualifications and insurances and things in order so I could finally do some pain relief coaching. This is something that's been in the works for me for many, many years. It feels like a really long time. But obviously after finding out about that, and yeah, it's something I need to put back on pause for a little while. So I have to finish up with the clients I have, and I'm not taking any new ones on. So that obviously brought up a lot of grief, not obviously, but brought up a lot of grief for me. There's been a really big mix of feelings, shock, excitement, grief. You know, I finally felt like I was out starting to do what I really wanted to do, what I've wanted to do for so long. And now it's kind of all going to be back. Paused a bit, wound back a lot. I mean, I'm going to have 2 kids under 2, so it's going to be really quite intense. Still trying to slowly work my way through my master's of clinical psychology. So at the moment, I'm out on my first placement as well. Almost halfway through that, but that is being a challenge to keep up with. Since falling pregnant, I actually found out I was pregnant a week before I started that. And now I have no idea how I'm going to deal with 2 children. But so it's just, yeah, a lot. Anyway, so there's my news. That's what's been happening for me. That's why I've really not been very present on social media, why a couple of episodes have been delayed. It's, yeah. All right. Anyway. Good news, big changes ahead for me though. It is what it is. It'll be great, but yeah. All right. Anyway, so this episode number 29, I speak with Anna Olivieri, and she is a pain coach and also someone who recovered from close to a decade of chronic pain, which includes IBS symptoms, fibromyalgia type symptoms, TMJ type symptoms, the whole gamut of things. And it's a good episode. It's a really great recovery story. And it brings in some things from her pain coaching. Really great section there where she talks about her body, how her body was fighting for her. She just didn't know how to listen to it. Amazing truth that really hits home. Anyway, so I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to let you, the episode speaks for itself. Listen to the episode. And I look forward to talking to you all next month.
I am a provisional psychologist with my PhD or my doctorate in education, but I'm not a medical doctor. So all of the content that I provide about mind-body healing in any medium, including but not limited to this podcast and my social media channels, is for informational purposes only. No content provided by me is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. The purpose is to promote broad understanding and knowledge of various health topics. If you choose to use any information provided by me, you do so solely at your own risk. Always seek the guidance of your doctor or other qualified health professional with any questions you may have regarding your health or medical condition. Do not embark on a mind-body healing journey until you have the clearance from your healthcare practitioner to do so, until you have discussed how to apply mind-body healing to your own individual case. The methods discussed by guests on the show are not necessarily endorsed by me.
Welcome to the Let's Talk Mind Body Healing podcast. I'm your host, Felicia Jaramus, and today I'm here with Anna Olivieri, who is a pain coach trained in pain reprocessing therapy. So welcome, Anna, and thanks for agreeing to come and have a chat with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So could you start by just telling listeners a little bit about yourself? Introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah, so I live in Buffalo, New York. I am a chronic pain coach. So I got my coaching certification and got trained in pain reprocessing therapy. And the reason that I did that is because I was a chronic pain sufferer myself for the better part of a decade, and was so grateful for the work of pain reprocessing therapy and just like mind body healing in general. So it really became kind of a passion of mine to help others, because I think that there should be more out there. And I would think the message needs to be louder for people to hear that are in chronic pain, because it took me a while to find it. So now I'm just hoping to help save others a little bit of time so that they don't have to be stuck in chronic pain.
Yeah, I think there's nothing like that feeling of getting on the other side and wanting to scream it from the rooftops, because it's just been a part of a decade. That's a really long journey.
Oh yeah, I know. And some people it's even much longer. So it's easy to get stuck, but it's amazing when you kind of find this thing that works, right?
So can you tell us a little bit about that journey? So 10 years, what sort of symptoms and things did you have, and how did you finally find the pain reprocessing therapy world?
Yeah, so I started out with more IBS type symptoms, and it kind of came on gradually for me. It wasn't like I just was immediately in this like really immense pain. It just was sort of like bothersome at first. You know, I went to a million doctors and went through the whole testing process, and they couldn't find anything structural. So I was diagnosed with IBS, and all the while my symptoms are just kind of like getting worse and worse, and I'm getting like pretty desperate to figure it out. And I kind of came to this point where I felt like I needed to take things into my own hands. And I like started seeing some, other types of gut health practitioners and nutritionists, and did all of the diets and things and supplements and like so many treatments, I can't even probably remember them all now. And it was just so defeating because, of course, none of them really worked. Like I might have a little improvement, and then it was just like back to feeling completely hopeless. So that was a whole cycle with the IBS. And, you know, there's a lot of like these sort of red herrings in the gut health field too,
It's
that sort
such
of
a
led.
big thing now, but gut health, it's everywhere.
I know. And like, you know, obviously some of those things are very important, like eating healthy. There's, you know, things out there that can be helpful, but for this type of neuroplastic pain, it's not. So that was a whole journey because I just went down all of these different rabbit holes around like SIBO and, you know, leaky gut and food sensitivities. And it was just a lot.
Yeah, I have so many friends who have TMS symptoms but won't like broach it as that, but they have IBS and they're all on low FODMAP.
Oh my gosh. And it's like the most restrictive diet like ever because
You can't
you
have onion and garlic. Like I start all of my meals with that.
Yes, it's in everything. It's in everything. I know. I mean, try eating out and not eating onion and garlic. It's pretty impossible to go to a restaurant. So yeah, and then so I even went to a GI doctor. You know, I was kind of sort of at my wit's end, like you know, at my a millionth doctor visit with my GI, and he was just sort of like, "Look, like you have IBS," and he was like, "This is a what we call a trash can diagnosis, and it's just what we tell patients when we can't figure out what's wrong with them." So that's where I felt like I was like, "Okay, obviously, I'm not getting any more answers from like the medical side of
Yeah.
things because the doc my doctor's literally telling me this." And then what was kind of interesting is, you know, and what started to kind of like bring me down this mind body path was I ended up getting COVID. And one of my symptoms when I had COVID was I had like a really bad headache. And oddly, like in the weeks following me healing from COVID, my symptoms kind of switched. Like it kind of switched, started moving from like my stomach to my head. And I started getting like TMJ like symptoms, which I know you've had before.
Oh yeah.
And I was diagnosed with migraine. And then I even went on to develop like some more fibromyalgia type symptoms.
I feel like
And
migraine is one of those trash can diagnoses too. Anything with the head, you get told you have migraine.
right, exactly. Pain in the stomach is IBS, pain in the head, migraine. Right, because my symptoms weren't even totally like it didn't always add up perfectly to like, I don't know, the diagnosis. So, and but that really indicated to me that something else was going on, right? Because it doesn't make
Yeah.
any sense that my pain would just like migrate like that to a different body part. And then I was that severe pain in my stomach was now in my head. And so that's when I started to kind of like really entertain this idea.
It's a classic giveaway, the migrating symptoms, that it's mind body.
Yeah, definitely. And I came across the podcast Tell Me About Your Pain with Alan Gordon. And I through that found the Curable app. And so that sort of like set me down this whole journey. But it really took me a long time to fully accept this like mind body diagnosis because I just had so many what ifs, right? Like I was like, well, what if it's this really weird thing I read about on Reddit or, you know, like something I found in the corners of the internet or that someone said to me once. So I really, really struggled with a lot of doubts, but it was, and then it was kind of like once I finally did accept that diagnosis and I finally believed that I could get better, that's when it really started to work for me. And obviously it took work and dedicated effort in fighting a lot of symptom imperatives and flare-ups and you know things along the way, but it was really incredible once I kind of made that once it clicked for me.
So I think one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is the what ifs and doubts. Could you talk a little bit more about that and sort of what you would recommend to people who are struggling with that?
Yeah, and I think it's what helped me was really writing down that evidence list. of, go on the PPDA website or somewhere that has one of those lists about all of the like ruling in mind body diagnosis, and write them down. Write down the ones that apply to you, and then as things come up in your life where you might see a connection, like, oh, I started to get a migraine right before, I don't know, a social gathering or something, or whatever like your specific stressor might be. And you notice that sort of correlation, write that down. Or when your symptoms go away, when your stress is lower, or whatever that trigger is not present, that can be another piece of evidence. So I started to kind of like build that. And I think too, a big thing was like even looking back. So looking back in your history, even back into like your childhood, and going back and looking at all the stressors that have happened within your life, and even positive things. Because when you think about stress, you usually think about negative events, but even positive things, like when my symptoms got really bad, it was 3 months before our wedding, which was obviously a very exciting time, but that, on top of other things that were going on in my life, were a source of stress. So I think writing down all of those things, like when I wrote down a timeline of my life, of all of the big events and big stressors, and then it kind of helped me acknowledge that, yeah, I actually had been through a lot of stress, because I think a lot of us tend to just be like, it wasn't that bad, or, kind of like write it off or say, everyone has to deal with stuff. And, but I think acknowledging that, oh yeah, I actually did go through a lot of stress in that period of my life, and it actually makes sense why my symptoms would flare up. And giving yourself that kind of compassion can help connect the dots too, I think, and help with some of those doubtful moments that inevitably come in.
Yeah, I think that's amazing advice. That's one of the things I always say I wish I had have done is when I was healing is write that evidence list. And the same as every time you have a little win, every time your symptoms like diminish a bit or like write it all down because you'll have doubts at the start and then doubts in the middle and then doubts again and doubts again. Like it's just one of those things.
Oh yeah, and I love like making my clients do this too, and I will force them to write it down, because there's something about putting it on paper and having that list to go back to and see it all together that becomes like a very strong argument usually for people when they build a lot of evidence. And then it makes you more aware too as things come up, and it makes you start to think, okay, well, what was happening yesterday, or what's coming up tomorrow when you're having a flare up? And usually there is something that you can point to. Not always, sometimes it's a little bit more subconscious, but typically you can start to build those connections.
Yeah, building more self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about your symptom imperatives and what they were like?
Oh yeah. TMJ being the first one, which was, since that was my sort of second symptom, I still was going down all the physical treatments at that point, getting massage, TMJ massage, using mouth guards, supplements, and things like that. But yeah, like I said, that was like the first clue to me that when the symptoms were moving around like that it was odd. And then the one symptom imperative that I still have to work on sometimes is this sort of like fibromyalgia type pain, I guess you could call it. It's in like my arms and legs and my hands and feet, that I'll just get like these aching feelings going on there. But yeah, it's pretty amazing to see what the brain can do and how it can just attach itself to a new body part and start to create pain somewhere else. And severe pain too. Like it's, that was one thing that had me kind of stuck for a while, was thinking, well, my pain is so bad, there's no way it can't be something physical, right? But when you think about it, if the brain is creating it, it can imagine, it's not imagined pain, but it's like, it can create these sensations, whatever sensation, severity, whatever location, it can create all sorts of symptoms in the body. So that was a, I think, a barrier for me as well. But yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of symptom imperatives along the way. I feel like I've hit like every major body part pretty much.
Yeah, as you do. I had a someone on this podcast once described it as the TMS gopher, just like makes its way through your body.
It is. It's like whack-a-mole. It really is. And but the strategies are the same, which is nice. You know, it's like, okay, I know what this is. I just need to use the same strategies to address this. Now, obviously, if it's like new pain, you want to get it checked out. But I'm pretty familiar with my triggers at this point and know that I kind of know when it's a neuroplastic thing versus, you know, potentially something physical.
So you said one thing you just said there was the strategies are the same. So what are your core strategies that really work for you?
Yeah, I think it is, and you know, different things work for different people, but I often will use like messages of safety, you know, to try to calm down some of the fear thoughts that might be coming up. Like if those doubts are coming up, you know, telling yourself you're safe, that this is temporary, remembering what it is, that there's nothing physically wrong in the body. This is just the brain sending a false alarm. And I like to do somatic tracking too. I'll, you know, just pop on a YouTube video and that can be helpful to just have like that guided somatic tracking. And then I like journaling. I didn't like journaling initially. I was kind of like, is this really going to help me? But it actually is a really powerful tool for just giving yourself that space to express and identify what emotions are going on with you, that it's not always so obvious. And just giving yourself that space to express whatever is going on in your mind, can be a nice outlet too, to just sort of like, and maybe it's frustration about your pain, maybe it's something going on in your life, but just giving yourself that outlet, I think, is really helpful.
Yeah, I was never a fan of the journaling, but now sometimes I'll use it more as like a, I have a lot of thoughts going around in my head all day. Like I need to just get the thoughts out, like just dump it out somewhere to just calm my mind a bit.
Yeah, and it kind of slows it down too, like especially when you're having racing thoughts, I feel like just, you know, the slowness of writing it kind of like forces your mind to slow down to a pace that can match your writing speed. I feel like there's something helpful with that too.
I have a question. So one of the things, so we talk about the brain sending a false alarm. Is it a false alarm? Or is it the brain's only way of telling you that you are like under too much stress?
Oh, I actually really like that perspective. Yeah, I guess it's only really a false alarm in the sense of there's no physical damage, but I do think what you just said is really important because it is alerting you to something. It's just not what you think it is. It's not a, you know, an injury or something structural in the body, but I absolutely do view my flare-ups now as information that there's something that I need to look at in my life, or something that I might be pressure I might be putting on myself, you know, self-care that I might need to focus on. You know, often, you know, when I'm kind of like soldiering on and pushing through and sort of like ignoring my needs, that can be a trigger for flare-ups for me. So yeah, I really like that perspective you put on it.
Yeah, the soldiering on, pushing through, ignoring needs is a, and also the pressure on yourself, pressure to be perfect, pressure to be good.
Oh,
So
absolutely. I'm very skilled at
it's very hard
that.
to change those traits in yourself, I think. Very
Oh,
hard.
yes. Absolutely.
So we might move on a little bit and talk a little bit about your experience with pain reprocessing therapy and training, and tell us a little bit about what that was like.
Yeah, so I took the pain reprocessing therapy training through the Pain Reprocessing Therapy Center, which was really great and really talked about a lot of the research around how, you know, we often think that pain is correlated with physical damage. That's just sort of like the message and the predominant message in our society. But
Yeah, it's what we were taught our whole lives, basically.
Yeah, culturally, from, and even when we go to the doctor, that is the expectation, right? But with recent research, we know that it's much more complicated than that, and that pain is more biopsychosocial, so that it's the body, but it's also the mind, and our environment have a play a big role in if we experience pain and how much. So it and it what's interesting is that we talk a lot about it being your pain's either physical or neuroplastic, but really any type of pain can benefit from these strategies, right? Like even if you have a physical issue in your body, if you are experiencing stress and you don't have social support and all of these things, that can worsen your pain as well. So yeah, and it's really interesting. I mean, a lot of the research is often around back pain because that is the
Yes. Yeah,
leading disability. It's the most expensive disability. So I would love to see more research come out around some of these other disorders as well. But it is so interesting to see how the physical issues, even in the back, are not necessarily correlated well with the amount of pain that people are in, or if they even have pain.
oh yeah, so many studies have shown that by the time you're like 80, everyone has, degenerated discs or bulging discs or spurs or, but not everyone walks around with a aching back. In
Exactly.
fact,
Yeah.
I think it's, don't quote me exactly on this, but back pain peaks in like 30s, 40s, 50s maybe. So if you think it was related to like, age-related changes, you'd think more 80-year-olds would be in pain, but no, it's more like 30, 40s, 50s, because those are the age of, they call it the age of responsibility. Those years are where you're the
Oh,
most stressed. Yeah.
that's so interesting. Well, yeah, it's even with IBS, I know that it's like it peaks around like 18 to 40s, mid 40s or something, like similar age range. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Just to back on there, that biopsychosocial. So that means your biology, your psychology, and your social. Would you like to unpack that one a little bit more?
Yeah, so biology, so meaning like if there is any injury or underlying disease or your genetics or anything like kind of that you could do a test on it and find a physical like thing going on.
I think also with that one, it's important to remember that biology is sometimes a trigger as well. You might have an injury, but the injury then becomes neuroplastic too. So, because
Yes.
it heals, but the circuits of pain have stayed in your brain.
Yeah, one interesting thing about that too, or an interesting study that I found was around IBS, and some people will have like an infection that kicks off their IBS, and so they think, oh, well, I had that infection and then I developed this chronic issue. And there was one really interesting study that looked at if they had experienced a traumatic or particularly stressful event within the 3 months preceding that food poisoning or whatever infection they had, I wish I had it in front of me, but the rates of them going on to develop IBS were higher.
Oh, wow, fascinating.
Yeah, and so these types of studies are so interesting because it points to the fact that yes, you might have had an injury or you might have had like something actually physically causing the pain initially, but for it to become chronic, there's often other factors playing in,
Yeah,
right?
the
Like some of these.
psychology and the social.
Exactly. And there was one study they shared with us too in our training about back pain. And they took a group of people who had just experienced a back injury and they did an MRI of their brain. And they predicted with like 90 plus percent accuracy the ones that would go on to develop chronic pain just by the way that their brains. Then these different areas of the brain were connected. So that was a really powerful study looking at just how the neural pathways are so important in defining chronic pain, right? And but the good news is that you can also change those through neuroplasticity.
That in itself, you could say, is biology too, like the actual neural pathways in your brain get so
Right.
complicated.
I know. So there is that there, but it's in your brain, which is also your mind. So it's like,
Also your psychology.
I know there's a lot of overlap. But yeah, the point being is that it's a lot more complicated than we initially thought, but yet we still kind of think in that very simplistic way of like physical damage equals pain.
I
But
think the big challenge is that it takes so long for research to filter down into practice. So anyone who goes and visits their doctor, like their doctor was trained on research that's now outdated. And I
oh, yeah.
have this debate with people in my life before, like, oh, but my doctor said this. I'm like, yeah, but has your doctor read the when was the last piece of research your doctor read? Like,
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even the doctors that are sort of well trained or aware of this model, it's difficult to bring up to a patient too, right? Because they don't want
yes.
to seem like they're insinuating that they're imagining this, that
Quote
there's
unquote,
something
in
wrong.
your head.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, some doctors are will just straight up say that to you, which is also problematic. But I think there just needs to be more education and a compassionate approach to it too, right? Because no one asks for this. No one, is purposefully putting themselves in chronic pain. Of course, it's the last thing you would want. But knowing that they have control over the solution is important too, right? Like you can, there are things that you can do from a psychological standpoint that can really, really help more than you might think.
So tell me more about that. You just said that you have control over the solution. Tell me more about that one.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as like, you didn't purposefully develop this issue. Like there's nothing you did wrong. I think that's a big reason too. I want to kind of like remove the shame piece of it because I
Yeah.
think a lot of people feel that, and I definitely felt that initially. But the empowering piece is this whole idea of neuroplasticity, where with when we redirect our thoughts and our behaviors, that can then create new neural pathways in the brain and literally change the connectivity and the physical structure of the brain, which is really, really cool when you think about it. So that's really the goal of all of this work of pain reprocessing therapy is, redirecting our thoughts mainly away from fear, right? Because we know that fear of the symptoms or stressful personality traits, lack of self-care, all of these things can sort of keep that the brain on high alert. Right. And that's going to keep triggering those symptoms and keep us stuck in that chronic pain loop. So, whenever we can kind of through somatic tracking or messages of safety or journaling or whatever works for you or emotional awareness and expressing emotions, all of these things are sort of helpful with turning down the dial of that brain that's on high alert. And that can then help those symptoms fade too.
I think that's a really important point to emphasize because people go, oh, telling myself I'm safe, like, what's the word for it?
Like gaslighting.
No, affirmations, messages of safety.
Oh,
Like,
yeah,
what is
affirmations.
that gonna do? And you go, actually, you are physically changing the structure of your brain. Like, by doing these practices, the neural pathways in your brain, you are slowly building new ones. Like, it's a real physical change by doing these things that seem so woo-woo, right? And seem so really out there for this culture, really.
Yeah, because we have a fear center in our brain, the amygdala, and that's like, firing off electrical impulses when we're in that state. And that's what's amazing about when you sort of are going against your instincts, because obviously your instincts are to be fearful, right?
Yeah.
And we've learned personality traits that might keep us stuck in that state too. But we can redirect it. And it's going to be uncomfortable at first, right? Because we're so used to operating in this one way. And it might feel so natural and it might feel so right in the moment. But sometimes, once you get that clarity around, okay, this is what my brain is doing, and I kind of need to redirect it in this other way, That's really where the healing happens.
Yeah, and practices like meditation, breath work, affirmations, they actually shrink, like physically shrink that fear center in your brain, your amygdala. So
It's so amazing. I know it's you're right. It's like it sounds on the surface like, oh, you expect me to just like think my way into this,
yeah.
but it is it's very powerful. And that's a big thing is that, our society just has a tendency to underestimate the power of the mind-body connection. And I think that is changing with research. We're starting to learn so much more about just how powerful it is. Obviously it's not everything. It's not, there are still physical issues out there that need medical treatment, but I think the PPDA, they estimate 40% of people who go to the doctor are experiencing mind-body symptoms. And it could be even higher than that, really. But the it was mind-blowing to me to learn about
It's
all of this.
so massive when you think about that. Imagine being a doctor and 4 in 10 people you come in and see that, like, you can't really. Like, you're giving them stuff and it's not doing anything for them. Like, it would be so defeating working in that
Right.
paradigm.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure it would make their lives easier too if there was more out there, more options to refer them to, these types of services.
I would think 40% seems really high, but then I think the more you know, and then the more you talk to people, and the more you go, yeah, you're neuroplastic, you're neuroplastic, you're, like, it's just everywhere. Like, almost everyone you talk to seems to have something.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have to hold myself back from
All
putting it on
the
people, everyone in my life, diagnosing everyone. But yeah, it's so prevalent. And I don't know. I wish I would have understood it sooner because I think it's just a it's an education thing that we need to amplify this message.
I wish I had it too, but at the same time, I probably wouldn't be the same person I am now. But it does cultivate a totally different relationship with your body and with life. And
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think it's interesting because I went into this with the whole goal of eliminating symptoms. But
yeah.
it's so much more than that. It's so much more than that. I mean, it changes, it helps you become more self-compassionate. It helps you get better at processing your emotions, realizing the pressure or stressful personality traits that you're putting on yourself. I mean, I think those are often rewarded in society and
That hustle culture of just like,
absolutely.
go, bury your needs, go.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And it's like I think people are becoming more aware of it. And it's like, it's not worth your health and it's not worth your mental and physical health because they're connected.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about that. About so you, I think we're all going with the goal of eliminating symptoms, and then find it's so much more. So can you tell me a little bit more about, I guess, how you've changed?
Yeah, it's funny because the you go into it with this like intense focus on the symptom itself and
Yeah.
just wanting to get rid of it. But then you learn as you go through it, it's like that is not always that intensity and approaching healing with that intensity is not always going to be helpful either because then you're keeping that pressure going, right? You're keeping that like stress going on the healing process itself. So it's really about changing your entire approach, not just to healing, but to everything, the way you approach life. It for me, I started to realize just how much perfectionism I had,
Yeah.
people pleasing, just all of these traits that we know are correlated with these types of issues, which I just wasn't really that aware of before. I think I didn't pay much attention to my emotions. I didn't pay much attention, or I didn't really see a problem with what I was doing until it was kind of one of those the body said no kind of things where I couldn't go on, right? Like my body was screaming, you need to change something about what you're doing. And now it's like I see the symptom itself as an indicator of that, versus like my body is just fighting against me. My body was fighting for me. My body was trying to tell me something, and I just didn't know how to listen to it or what to look for, or I didn't understand the message it was trying to tell me. But now I'm so grateful that it did, because I think it's completely changed me as a person. You know, obviously I'm still trying to I'm a work in progress, you know, like I still struggle with things from time to time, but I am just so happy that I have found this path, because I think it's not only helped with my pain, but it's made me a better person, and it's helped me make my life more sustainable.
Yeah, I could just quote that. My body was fighting for me. I just didn't know how to listen to it and how grateful you are. That's like amazing. That sums up how that kind of the feeling you have when you start to get to the other side.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny that you go in with one goal and then you just come out and you realize it's so much bigger than that goal itself.
I think you go in so afraid and being like, my body is so broken and so damaged. And why did I end up in this body? And what did I do? And there's a lot of like, what about me? Like, what is it? Like, poor me is going on, you know?
Oh, definitely. I know. I felt like I was trapped in this painful body and I was just doomed to suffer forever. That was how I felt.
Okay, so we'll go back. So, back to the pain reprocessing center stuff. So you talked a little bit about the research they showed you, which was pretty amazing for you. Was there anything else that stood out for you or that you learned in the training that you didn't know beforehand?
Yeah, one thing that was interesting to me is I had known about somatic tracking against symptoms, but they taught us about also kind of like a form of somatic tracking with emotions, that I found really interesting, which, you know, emotions are physical, feelings in the
Yes.
body, and we can often become very
But
shut down.
let's stop there though. That's a really important point just to make it itself. Emotions are physical feelings in the body. So like if you're listening, do you feel those things, right? Because I didn't for a really long time.
Oh yeah. I mean, we can get so shut down to them and so like almost disassociated with them that like I never even thought about it. I never thought about emotions in my body. But going through this work, I started to recognize, especially fear. Like I started to recognize when I feel fear, there's a very intense energy in the middle of my chest. And now I can kind of look to that and say, oh, there's my fear. I'm feeling fearful right now. Whereas before I wasn't tuned into it like that. I didn't really have that physical indicator to kind of alert me to the fact that I was feeling fearful. So one of the things we learned about was you can actually use the same somatic tracking techniques on an emotion and kind of like identifying it in the body, looking at it through that lens of curiosity and from a sense of safety, because I think with emotions, you can start to almost that can become a source of fear, right? Like, oh, you know, I was punished for showing anger growing up. So when I feel that angry feeling, I'm gonna, you know, push it away and shove it down. And there's like a resistance there. But with somatic tracking, you're just letting things flow. You're just observing it from this like light sense of curiosity. It's a different approach, right? And it's starting to kind of allow that physical sensation of the emotion to flow, how it needs to, right? Because every time we sort of repress that again is that's putting pressure on ourselves. That's like we're blocking the release of that physical feeling. So that can contribute to keeping that pain signal alive as well.
Yeah, I love that practice. That's a practice I use a lot in my healing, is tracking the emotions, but I didn't really have like a word for it. It was just kind of something that sort of, because I had these new feelings in my body all of a sudden, right? So I was like, oh, I'm going to look at what these are.
Yeah, and it can be a good practice too of like when your pain is if you're having a flare up, check in with those like emotional feelings. Like, is there anything like physically going on? Do you notice fear coming up? Do you notice like any other emotions that are coming up? It can be important to kind of like shift into that emotional awareness mode too, because there could be something that you're not even consciously aware of. Most of the time we're kind of just like going about our day and not really paying attention to this stuff. So I think it's a good practice to start to be more aware of those things.
I think it's a really good way of helping you stay regulated as well. Because if you're aware that, oh, there's a bit of fear coming up, you can just like take a deep breath for a second, acknowledge it, rather than pushing through, which then sends you into that kind of fight or flight, high stress state. And that sort of
Yeah.
awareness really helps you stay a bit more grounded.
Totally. And I also think it's good to notice, like when you start noticing those things like fear, I also try to become very aware of my thoughts, and know that when I'm feeling that fearful fear feeling in my body, my thoughts, I probably should be more weary of the thoughts that are coming into my head and not necessarily believe every
Yes.
single thing that comes in. Because when you're in that state, your mind is going to start generating those catastrophic thoughts, those, picturing the worst case scenario or telling yourself that you're the worst person ever, right? Like these thoughts that are very negatively skewed because you're in that really activated fight or flight state. And so that those physical indicators of that emotion in the body can be a really, really good way to say, okay, whatever thoughts are coming up right now, I'm just going to let those slide and I'm not going to buy into it because I know that my brain is going to be lying to me right now.
Yeah, it's your anxiety brain. That's my anxiety brain. I'm not going to listen to you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not my, me brain. It's my anxiety brain.
Yep, totally.
I think one of the most powerful things I also learned how to do was how to recognize there's a really strong feeling of when you come out of fight or flight. Like I find that I just feel my body go, oh. And I learned how to recognize that feeling.
Oh, that's
See,
really cool. Like switching into the
it's what,
parasympathetic.
yeah, it's when I come out of it, like I just feel my body go, oh. I think that's one of the most powerful, because I go, oh, okay, that's why I've like yesterday I had a raging headache all day. Headache, 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 headache. Then I went and did like a stretch class and I felt my body go, oh, and the headache was gone.
That's amazing. I know. I find that too, where it's like when I get into that. Rest and digest mode, my body is so much more quiet. Like it's when I'm in that activated state when the symptoms are like my body, I call it like really noisy or loud, like the sensations are loud. But when I can get into that rest and digest, everything just kind of quiets down. And that to me was another big piece of evidence for having a mind body syndrome.
It's amazing how powerful that relationship between the mind and the body is. And it's amazing that it's been so unrecognized in our culture.
I know. I know. And that's why I'm out here shouting it from the rooftops, like other people in this space, because it's just so it was so mind-blowing to me. And it's funny because the more I've like looked into this isn't like a new concept. We've always, appreciated the mind-body connection up until like maybe 50 some years ago when we just kind of forgot. For a little bit. And then it's just like starting to come back in, the last like, I don't know, 40 years or, really, it's still coming back because we
Yeah.
often still have this association. So.
Think we got really excited about surgeries and all those sorts of cutting edge, body hacking
Oh, exactly.
technologies. Those
Everything
that was what we were
physical.
focused on.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, we might start wrapping up a little bit. So Closing kind of questions I have are usually, what are your top three resources or recommendations for people? It could
Oh.
be like a affirmations, or it could be a book, or it could be like anything.
Yeah, well, I guess I would have to say the evidence list for number one, since I
Oh,
kind
good
of already mentioned
one.
the importance of that. Because I think if you don't believe that this can work for you, you don't need to believe 100%, but if you don't, at least a little part of you believe that this can work for you, then it's not going to work because you're not going to have that hope and empowerment that's kind of like helping you along the way. And I think the second one I would say is cultivating that felt sense of safety in the body, that kind of rest and digest mode that we were talking about. And different strategies are going to work for different people. You can try breathing exercises, messages of safety, journaling, all of those. Really, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make that your default state, because that's how human beings are supposed to operate, right? We're not supposed to be in fight or flight as our default state. That's just for us to address the threat and then go back into our, rest and digest mode. So, whatever sort of regulating or calming strategies can work for you, definitely focus on those. And then I think the third one, I mean, somatic tracking is great. I would try somatic tracking on your pain and also emotions. You can find stuff on YouTube. There's a lot of great stuff out there. If you don't know where to start, there's a lot of free resources of somatic tracking. So just give it a try. Know that it's going to be a little uncomfortable at first, but it gets easier the more you practice it.
It's a really important point. Know that it's going to be uncomfortable at first. And actually, you mentioned that earlier. I should have asked you about that earlier when you were talking about how change can be uncomfortable. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how breaking out of our kind of familiar patterns is difficult?
Oh yeah, I think anytime you're starting something new, it's gonna feel like effort, and it's going to kind of suck a little bit because your brain wants to stay in what's familiar and the easy patterns that it's used to, even if those patterns are hurting us. So that's where, yes, it is gonna feel difficult, like learning any new school or any new skill. Like if you were learning like an instrument or something, it's gonna feel like very arduous in the beginning. But the more you practice it, it becomes second nature. And it can, that's ultimately what you want to get to is getting into that rest and digest mode as your default state, not changing that reaction to the symptoms from a very fearful reaction to that sense of curiosity and lightness that you practice with somatic tracking. So yeah, it's like learning any skill. It gets easier with time, and it becomes it doesn't feel so difficult like it does in the beginning.
Yeah, it starts to become second nature after a while. But in the beginning, it certainly is one of the, I think it's one of the hardest things you'll do is to undo a lifetime of conditioning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And be patient with yourself because, yeah, it can be a lifetime. It can be, these are traits that we developed in childhood often. So be very compassionate with yourself as you're going to have setbacks too along the way. That's the brain starting to pull, trying to pull you back into that familiar state. You might have symptom imperatives. These are very common things along the journey. It's not, some people will read one book and they'll be better, but a lot
No,
of us,
I hated those people.
I know. I was like, I've read so many books. But yeah, it's often a longer journey and takes time, but it's so worth it when you dedicate that time and practice it.
Lots of compassion, I think. That's what you were just saying. These are often traits that were developed in childhood. These came from, places of survival, places of doing what you needed to do. Like, it's not, I think compassion is so important.
Oh, definitely. It's critical. It's so critical.
Okay, lucky last question. What is your very last piece of parting advice that you want to leave the audience with? Tough question.
Just, I guess I would say if you're out there and you're questioning whether your diagnosis or symptoms could be neuroplastic or mind body, like I said, go look at the PPDA website, look at the criteria, take the quizzes, and start to see if this might be a fit for you. Because I mean, it's hard to accept at first. It took me a long time to fully embrace this idea. But if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you're open to it. So just entertain the idea and see if you might relate to some of the criteria.
Well
That's
said.
all.
Well said. Okay, I'm just going to stop the recording now.